Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Today we're continuing our series, My Family Circus, and a real big push and real big idea behind this is we all know that we all have families, whether you're single, you're married, whether you have kids, whether you never want kids, we all have a family. But oftentimes, our families look more like a freak show than the greatest show on earth. And what we want to do in this series is we want to give the tools necessary to have a healthy family. And what you have to understand is in order to have a healthy family, you have to be a healthy family member. You cannot control the rest of the people in your family. You can only work on controlling yourself. Last week, in case you missed it or you just don't remember, the big idea was we want great families without putting in effort. You cannot have uphill results with downhill effort. Everybody wants a great family, but very few people are willing to commit to make their family great. If you want to have a great family, you got to commit. And the way that you do that, the effort that you put in, is not towards pointing the finger at other people, not telling other people their issues. It's looking inward and saying, hey, what do I need to do to be a great part of this family? What parts do I need to change? What do I need to do about myself? Our scripture today that's going to direct us is written by the Apostle Paul. And Paul is important to Christians because he wrote over half of the New Testament. And in the section that we're going to read, Paul does something that he does often in his letters, and that is he tries to inspire Christians to live a better life. Paul's idea and Paul's understanding is that if you're a Christian, you should be better because of who you represent. It doesn't mean that you're perfect. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have issues. We all have issues. None of us are perfect. But as a Christian, we are called to a higher standard. I love the way that Pastor Andy Stanley puts this. He says, following Jesus will make your life better and make you better at life. And I think that's essentially Paul's point, that if you follow Jesus, it does make you better at life. Does that mean your life's going to be perfect? No. You have issues. We all have issues. Paul, when he wrote the letter that we're going to read, he was sitting in a Roman prison, chained to a Roman guard. That doesn't sound like the American dream. That doesn't sound like an ideal life. And yet Paul looked at his situation and said because he was following Jesus, he was actually thankful to be in chains because his chains served as a way to advance the gospel. That's an amazing thought, that because he was suffering in jail, more people were hearing about Jesus. Wouldn't that be an amazing perspective for our problems? Wouldn't it be amazing to have a problem, say, I don't like this problem, this stinks, but I'm going to keep my eyes on Jesus and figure out how to make the most out of this difficult situation. And so Paul gives us some challenging words. These words are written to Christians to inspire, to challenge, to motivate Christians. And I want to read to you a section of it. At Next Level, we want to honor the text because we really do think that this text, it is inspired by God. It's His words to us. And we think that it can change our lives if we apply it and we listen to it. So I want to invite you to stand to your feet and read with me a section of our scripture for today. It's Romans 12, 18. Read it nice and loud. It says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Now that we've read the text, let's go to God in prayer. God, come before you right now, and we just ask that you would speak to our hearts, that you would give us what we need, God, that you would inspire us, that you'd motivate us, that you'd challenge us. God, we ask that you'd convict us. We ask that you'd help us to see ourselves the way that you see us. Would you just move in our hearts, move in our lives? And God, whenever you speak, it's hard, it's challenging, so we ask that you give us the courage to obey you, no matter how scary it is. And God, I ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated.
Welcome to Family Feud. I am your host, Bob Shepherd. All right. Okay, folks, we need to gather in real close, right here. You're a little closer over here. We're going to pretend we've all had showers and used mouthwash, so it'll be fine. So you are?
Tabitha.
Andrew.
Kelly.
Kevin.
All right, well, we need to determine who's going to go first. So I am thinking of a number between 1 and 10. 7.
3.
Oh, my goodness, it was 7. Right on. Let's give her a hand. That's incredible. All right, folks, here is our category today. Most common things that cause conflict in the family. So think about that. Most common things that cause conflict in the family. And we had to have surveyed, and we have our top five things that cause conflict. So think about it just a second. All right.
Teenager.
No, I'm sorry. I understand, though, where you're coming from. All right, we're going to do, it looks like so. I was corrected by our automatic team that checks everything for us. So obviously, teenagers would cause stress. Excellent. All right. So,
money.
All right. The survey says finances, which is money. Good job. All right. Ready?
Work.
All right. So, this gives you the opportunity to steal. I assume you'd like to take that. Is that correct? All right. So you need to... All right. And your answer is?
Sex.
Oh. All right. Yeah. And there's certainly a lot of different opinions about that today. You betcha. All right. And
Other family.
Other communication. All right. Well, you all are on a roll. Okay.
Keeping up with the Joneses.
The neighbors. Life changes. Whoa. All right. Well, there's only one more. Have you got one more good answer? What? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You have won! Yay! All right. And here is your prize. Thank you so much. Give our contestants a hand. And thank you for playing Family Feud.
So, not every church has their own owner that has his own IMDb page and has been in multiple films and television shows. Would you help me thank my dad for hosting? Now, I wanted us to play a round of Family Feud because I think it is a great illustration of what conflict in the family should be. The truth of the matter is, all of us have conflict. If you have a family, you have conflict. Most of us deny that we have conflict. It's natural to say, no, we don't have conflict, we don't fight, but we all have conflict in our families. And the truth of the matter is, if a family commits to play by a certain set of rules, and if a family commits to fight together instead of with each other, you can actually come out on the other side of a conflict in a healthy way. You can actually have a family feud, and it's still somewhat fun. You're not tearing each other apart. You can still end up winning at the end of a healthy family conflict. Today, I want to talk to you about conflict, and the reason I want to talk to you about it is because it is one of the things, one of the main reasons why families break up. It's one of the main reasons why families have issues is because they don't know how to deal with conflict. The truth of the matter is, dealing with conflict is not a natural response. You have to be trained, you have to understand and do some research on how to handle conflict in a healthy way. The truth of the matter is, though, you can learn how to have healthy conflict. But without some intentional investment, without some intentional work, what happens is when there's conflict, the claws come out and everyone just fights for themselves, and it ends up being a horrible mess. If you've ever been to the zoo, they always have a part of the zoo where the animals come out, and the animals do all sorts of amazing things. And when last time I went to the zoo, they had this crocodile guy, and he had trained crocodiles and had them do tricks. And I don't know what like possesses a person to think, you know what I do want to do with my life? I want to train crocodiles. Like, I don't know what was going on in his head, but at one point he has the crocodile open his mouth and he sticks his head on his tongue and he just like rolls his head around and the crocodile does not snap down on his head. It was phenomenal. It was amazing. I don't know how he trained the crocodile to do that. My point is, though, that with enough effort and enough work, you can take these wild beasts and tame them. You and I, we are not wild animals. And yet when it comes to conflict, we often act like it. You were not born with claws, and yet when conflict happens, the claws come out, and we fight in unfair ways, and we fight to win the battle as instead of trying to solve the problem. The truth, though, is when surveyed, the vast majority of people, when asked, do you have conflict in your family, the vast majority of people say, no, we don't ever fight in our conflict in our family, and that's not true. The truth of the matter is, in an average couple has conflict 2,455 times a year. That averages out to be roughly 7 times a day. So if you're married, this is just marriage, if you're married, you have conflict with your spouse on average about 7 times a day. Now that could be more, that could be less. I would argue if it's less, it's because you don't see your spouse on that day. You're not around them. It's one of you's at work. The truth of the matter is we all have conflict. We all do. And ignoring it, denying it, saying that we don't fight in our family is just being dishonest. You have conflict. There are times when you get angry, you get upset, you don't like the way someone else does something. There are conflicts. We had surveyed up the top 5 conflicts from family. These are the things that bring tension and issues in our family. But here is a major issue with conflict. 69% of all conflicts are never solved in the family. 69%. And the reason that so many conflicts are not solved is because we don't know how to handle conflict. So many of us run away from conflict, we ignore it, we say, I just can't deal with it, and so the problem never gets solved. Others of us, though, when conflict comes, we rise up and we get angry and we yell and scream, and we may win our way, but because we haven't brought the other person on board, we didn't really solve the conflict, we won a battle. I am convinced that you can learn to have healthy conflicts where at the end of the day, the problem is actually solved and nobody wins. Both of you have to compromise, both people, even if it's your kids, everyone comes around the table and says, for the good of our relationship, we're going to make some compromises, we're going to make some changes to solve the problem. Because that's ultimately what we want from conflict, is to solve problems. I want to show you what Paul has to say to Christians, and I think it applies specifically to us with families. In Romans 12:17, Paul writes, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. Paul says, do not repay anyone. That word anyone means anyone. Do not repay anyone. Well, what about the person that's mean to me? Yeah, don't repay them with evil. What about my spouse? My spouse is just like, if you were married to my spouse, you'd want to be evil to her too. Like, no, anyone. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Now, why is this an important teaching? Because the natural response to evil is to give more evil. The natural response is when you hurt me, I want to hurt you. That's the natural response. The natural response is to retaliate and to give back to someone what they've given to you. So if someone's nice to you, the natural response is, oh, I want to be nice to them. Someone gets you a Christmas gift, you say, oh, I want to get them a Christmas gift. But when someone hurts you, you don't think about the opposite. You think about, how do I get them back? Retaliation is the natural response, and retaliation escalates conflict. When there's a conflict and you come out with your claws and you come out and say, I'm going to treat you the way that you've treated me, it just causes a bigger conflict. It causes a bigger war. And the problem's not solved because both people are reacting to the conflict. And Paul says, when someone does something evil, when someone does something you don't like, the way to respond is not with more evil, because that doesn't solve the problem. He then says, be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. Now, this needs some explaining, because if you just take this as just a statement, you would say, well, that means that we have to be people pleasers, and I need to walk around and say, hey, what feels right to you, and what feels right to you, and I got to aim to try to make everyone happy. That's not Paul's point at all. And we know this through the context of his letter, and especially in this section. What Paul is saying is when it comes to relationships, the way that you respond to conflict, the way that you respond to an evil person, represents Jesus. So in the midst of conflict, represent Jesus well. Because you can't control what someone else does for you. If someone brings evil to you, you can't control that. All you can work on doing is controlling your response. Because evil for evil, tit for tat, that doesn't solve anything. And the truth of the matter is, if you're here today and you are a Christian, you are responsible for your responses. And the way that you respond to other people is a reflection of Jesus' love. Because what did Jesus do for us? Jesus forgave us when we were unforgivable. And Jesus loved us when we are unlovable. And Jesus is patient with us when we're incredibly impatient. Jesus gives us something that we couldn't get on our own. Jesus gives us something supernatural. And in return, I'm to give that to others. So what does Jesus say? Jesus says that you will be forgiven in the same way that you've been forgiven. And Jesus says, you don't just love your friends, you also love your enemies. And Jesus says, when someone slaps you on the cheek, offer them the other cheek. None of this is natural. The natural response is, you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. But no, no, no. Christians were called to a higher standard. So when it comes to conflict, we're not prepped to, how do we handle this? We're not prepped to respond or to be healthy in conflict. What we are naturally is we're naturally prepped to retaliate, to get back. If you've hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. And so what I want to do is I want to teach you the three natural reactions to conflict. There are three natural reactions. If you're taking notes, I'd encourage you to write these down. And what I really want you to do with these is I want you to reflect on how you react to conflict. Because at the end of the day, someone may bring conflict, someone may be ugly to you, but you're not responsible to them. You are only responsible for how you respond. So when it comes to conflict, there are three natural reactions. Number one is passive. Passive. The passive person is best described as the victim. The passive person will say, woe is me. My life is hard because everyone else has been mean to me. Or I'm this way because that's the way my parents were. And I don't have a choice in the matter. Like, I'm the victim here. I'm not happy in my marriage because of her or because of him. I'm not happy because my kids are, they're all just crazy kids. I'm the victim here. I am a passive participant. A definition of a passive person or victim is a passive person blames other people or situations for feeling miserable. The passive person thinks that it is everyone else's responsibility to make them happy. And the truth of the matter is, no one can make you happy. Happiness is a choice. And so when it comes to conflict, the passive person says, right now in this moment, I'm not happy and it's your fault. And the way that a passive person responds to conflict is to avoid it. So the passive person is the one, when conflict starts to happen, the passive person starts to shut down, and in the midst of the conflict, the family member might say, hey, I feel like you're upset, or you got quiet all of a sudden. Are you upset? And the passive person lies. No, I'm not upset. I'm just tired. Liar. There's something wrong. And everybody knows it. You know it. The other person knows it. But the passive person is so afraid of conflict that they just shut down. And 69% of all conflicts are not solved. I wonder if a big reason is because we're scared of dealing with conflict. The passive person says, this is so hard, this is so difficult, I'm just going to avoid it. I'm going to run away from the problem, and I'm not going to solve the issue. Some characteristics of passive behavior are the silent treatment, shutting down, retreating, or avoiding. And these are natural responses. So someone brings conflict, your response is, I'm going to shut down, I'm going to ignore it. It's just too hard to deal with. Number two, three natural reactions to conflict. Number two is passive-aggressive. Passive-aggressive. The passive-aggressive person attacks in a passive way. There's an ancient Chinese proverb that describes passive-aggressive behavior, and it says, behind the smile, a hidden knife. Behind the smile, a hidden knife. A definition of a passive-aggressive person is a passive-aggressive person will avoid the person in conflict, but find subtle ways to hurt them. So a passive-aggressive person is very similar to the passive person, except they want to get back. They want to retaliate. So when someone hurts them, they shut down and they get silent. They may avoid conflict. And they'll even put a smile on their face and say, oh, no, everything's okay. But deep down inside, they're brooding and they're thinking of a way. How do I get back at them? How do I make them feel the way that they've made me feel? I heard a story one time about a passive-aggressive wife who had conflict with her husband, and whenever conflict would happen, she would just always take the victim and always say, yeah, you're right, honey, I'm the one to blame, and yep, you're right, and I'm horrible, and yep, this is just, you're completely right. And she'd put a smile on her face, and he would think the conflict was over. Well, the next day, after a conflict, he would go to work, and she would clean the house, And while she was cleaning the house, she would get to the bathrooms and she would take his toothbrush and clean the toilets with his toothbrush. He never knew this, and this went on for years, and he never knew it, and that is the way she felt good about a conflict. She felt better about herself because she hurt him in a way that still made her look good. He didn't know. Now, I don't know if some of you are talking right now because you've done that, or or because you're worried. Maybe your husbands are like, why does my toothbrush taste funny? Check. The truth of the matter is that a lot of people are naturally passive-aggressive. Passive-aggressive, it's not a learned behavior. It is a natural thing. It's when conflict happens, you go to saying, I don't like conflict, but I want to hurt the other person. And so you avoid, you pretend like everything's okay, but you look for ways to harm the other people. Some characteristics of passive-aggressive people, this happens in the workplace a lot. A passive-aggressive person will get an assignment and say, I don't like that assignment, but they won't tell the boss, they won't talk about it, they'll just put a smile on their face, but then when it comes time to meet and get the project done, they won't do their part. And they often have a good excuse, I was just really busy, or yeah, just life was just really crazy, but the truth of the matter is, it's a passive-aggressive way to get their way. I didn't want to do this to begin with, so I'm going to hurt you by not bringing to the table what I said I was going to bring to the table. Passive-aggressive people look for subtle ways to hurt the other person. It's not going to be obvious, and it's going to be really hard. If you have a passive-aggressive person in your life, it's really hard to see because they seem happy and they seem okay. And when you say, is there anything wrong, they say no. But look for it. You'll see that there's little digs. There's little ways the passive-aggressive person will say, I'm fine, but then go talk about you behind your back. The passive-aggressive person is looking for ways to feel better by harming you. Three natural reactions to conflict. Number three is aggressive. The aggressive person. The aggressive person will respond in conflict with attacking the other person. So the aggressive person isn't necessarily afraid of conflict. This is what separates aggressive from the passive and from the passive aggressive. Aggressive person, when conflict happens, they think this is a war that I need to win. And the aggressive person will do anything they can to win that war, including raising their voice, yelling, intimidation, bringing up the past. If an aggressive person feels like they're losing, they will have unfair fighting tactics. They will say things like, okay, you got me. I didn't take out the trash like I said I was. But let me tell you, remember what you did last week? Let's talk about what you did. You don't do this. And it's an aggressive tactic to make the other person feel bad. And the issue with being an aggressive person in conflict is you might win the battle, but you lost the war. Because when you beat up your family members in the midst of conflict, nobody wins. And these are the natural responses. It is every single one of us in the room has one of these natural responses. When conflict happens, you go to either being passive-aggressive, or aggressive. And that's why our big idea for today, which comes from Paul's teaching, our big idea is that we need to learn to respond instead of react to conflict. We need to learn to respond instead of react to conflict. The natural thing that we do to conflict is react. If you're mean to me, I'm going to react and be mean to you. If you're mean to me and I don't like it, I might shut down. I might be passive. If you're mean to me, I might be passive aggressive. I'll shut down, try to harm you in another way. That's natural. That's just how you are wired. But that doesn't solve conflict, right? And so what we need to do is instead of reacting to conflict, we got to learn how to respond. How do I respond? In the midst of conflict, evil for evil, it doesn't work. So what should I do instead? Look at what Paul says in Romans 12:18. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on your kids' behavior. If it is possible, as long as it depends on how your spouse treats you. If it is possible, as far as if everyone's nice to you and everyone does what you want and everyone folds the laundry the way that you want and puts the dish away the way you want and everyone acts like you and everyone serves you and everyone loves you, as long as that happens, live at peace with everyone. That's not what Paul says. Paul says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Why is this important? Because the truth of the matter is, I don't bring every conflict into the relationship. There are sometimes when unhealthy people bring conflict. There are sometimes when unhealthy people bring anger or they bring bitterness or they bring all sorts of unhealthy things, and I'm not responsible for what they do. I'm only responsible for me. So as far as it depends on you, so someone, your spouse, if you're married, your spouse is crabby, it depends on you how you're going to respond to that. You have kids, you cannot control your kids. Your kids might have crazy behaviors. Your kids might do things that you think, this is so frustrating. You can't control your kids. You can only control how you respond to your kids in the midst of... Now, this is not easy stuff. But this is where Paul is talking about. This is a supernatural thing that happens inside of us when we follow Jesus. When we get our eyes off of ourselves and put our eyes onto Jesus, then we can learn how to respond to even conflict in a way that honors God. Look at what Paul says next in Romans 12, 19 through 20. He says, "Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, 'It is mine to avenge, I will repay,' says the Lord." I want to stop there just for a second. What Paul is talking about, he's talking about specifically to people who are being tortured to death or killed for their faith. And Paul is saying there are some circumstances where even if you tried to have revenge, even if you tried to pay them back, even if you tried to fight back, it wouldn't work. So in those instances, don't spend your energy trying to figure out how to hurt them. Just give it to God and trust that God is the final judge and God will take care of them. What you have to do is control you. And look what he says specifically. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. This is so life-changing because the natural response is when conflict comes for me to give evil back. If you've hurt me, I'm going to hurt you back. And Paul says, no. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, give him something to eat. That is, respond differently than the way that you would naturally respond. So someone brings anger, you need to bring peace. Someone brings passive-aggressive, you need to bring some calm in this. You need to bring some empathy. Someone tries to hurt you, the answer is not to hurt them back. The answer is to do something supernatural. You bring peace in the midst of evil. So how do we respond to conflict? Because there's a natural way that you respond, and if you're in family, there's a natural way that your kids and your spouse responds. And since you're not responsible for them, how can you respond? When someone brings something unhealthy to the table, what can you do about it? Well, I want to give you three responses to conflict. Passive people need to hear. If you have someone in your life, someone in a relationship with that is passive, they need to hear that's tough. Now, what are you going to do about it? If you have someone who's naturally passive and that's what they bring to the conflict or that's what they bring to your life and you say, hey, something's going on, they're shutting down, they're getting quiet, you need to show them empathy because that's ultimately what they want. The victim wants to know that they're loved no matter what. And so you got to show them that. I love you. I'm not going anywhere. I care about you. This is hard. I know this is hard. But now what are you going to do about it? Because the victim is waiting for other people to fix their mess and they've got to work on themselves. And so as the response, when someone brings the victim mentality to you and says, I can't change. My parents weren't supportive. I can't change. It's just the way I was raised. I can't change. I can't help myself for getting angry. I can't help myself. When someone responds, you got to respond with empathy. Bring the opposite of what you think they need. That's tough. I hear you. I'm really sorry that that's what you went through. I'm sorry that your childhood was like that. I'm sorry that that's the way that you feel. I'm sorry. That's tough. And after you show them some empathy, then you encourage them by saying, what are you going to do about it? I get that that's tough. I get that you have a hard time dealing with this because of your family or because of your past, but what are you going to do with it? And you get them to think about their next step. And if you have someone in your life who's completely passive and constantly just whining, complaining, and saying they're a victim, that's what you have to go to every time. I love you. I care about you. Yes, that's tough. But now what are you going to do about it? Because their problems won't get solved as long as they have the victim mindset and they think that everyone else is causing them unhappiness. What do you do with a passive-aggressive person? Well, passive-aggressive people need to hear, I feel you're upset. We can talk when you choose to be responsible and tell me what is really going on. Now, this is the opposite of what we feel. Naturally, when someone shuts down, when someone is being passive, especially passive-aggressive, when they shut down and they're quiet and you know something's wrong, the natural tendency is to push and to say, hey, no, really, what's wrong? Tell me, I think you're upset. Come on, I really want you to talk. And you push. And does it ever work? No. You push someone who's shutting down, they just shut down more. And so what you have to do is you have to control your response and your reactions and say, hey, this is tough. I get it. I sense that you're frustrated. And I want to talk about it. So I'll come back when you're ready to talk. Don't make them lie, because they're going to lie to you. If you say what's wrong, they're going to say nothing. They're going to say they're just tired. Don't make them lie. You know the truth. You know they're upset. So give them a better option. I feel you're upset. I want to know. I want to know what's going on with you. I care about you so much. I want to try to solve this problem. So you're upset. I'm going to come back when we can talk about it. And give them some space and then come back and talk about what the real issue is. And if the passive-aggressive person won't tell you what the real issue is, if they try to attack you back, if they try to say, hey, the issue is you never do this or you always do that, you've got to say, okay, I get you, I hear you. But what's really upsetting you in this moment? What's the real thing that's, you're attacking me right now, but I don't think I'm the problem. What's really upsetting you in this moment? Oh, you feel stressed because of all these things? Okay, I can help you with that stress. But I can't help you if you're going to passive-aggressively attack me. Number three, aggressive people need to hear, I will only talk to you when you choose to be respectful. Aggressive people need to hear, I will only talk to you when you choose to be respectful. What's the natural response when someone is aggressive? The natural response is either shut down and walk away from the fight or to rise up and get bigger. And we think, if you're going to yell at me, I'm going to yell louder. And whoever yells the loudest is going to win the victory. But that doesn't really solve the problem. The way that you deal with someone who is aggressive is you do not let them walk all over you. You calmly say, hey, I get you're upset. I understand it. I'm going to leave, and I'll come back when you're ready to be respectful. And you end it. Now, this is something that works. It's not something that I'm just hoping to give you guys. It works. I try it on my kid all the time. Literally, I have one of my kids responds to conflict, responds in a very unhealthy way. It's a natural way. And when this kid, without giving names, when this kid, I have two, so just pick one, 50% chance of understanding who it is. When one of my kids responds and wants to escalate conflict, my response almost every time, I'm not perfect at this, but my response on a consistent basis is, we can talk when you can calm down and show me respect. As your dad, I'm not going to let you disrespect me. So you can come back. We'll talk about it. I'll hear you out. Maybe I am wrong. Maybe I'm the issue here. But I'm not going to let you yell and scream. I'm not going to do it. You give me respect. Try this in your relationships and watch what happens. Because you're not responsible for what they bring to the table. You're only responsible for how you respond to them. A handful of years ago, we had a contractor who did some work for us. And the contractor didn't do their part of the work. And oftentimes, when you call someone out or you have to let someone go or have to have these hard conversations, people aren't self-aware enough to know that they're the issue. And so I wasn't the one that let this person go. Someone else let them go. But because of my position as the pastor of the church, I got attacked. And I got this really long email. And it was long. It was a book of an email. And the email just said, you are such a liar. And it was filled with venom. And it just attacked me. And I didn't think twice about it. I didn't let it destroy my self-worth. I didn't let it destroy my day. I simply replied back. I said, listen, I've always shown you respect. And I'll talk to you and I'll hear you out when you can show me respect. That's all I said in the email. Less than 5 minutes later, I got a response back that said, I'm so sorry. I lost my temper. I was so upset. I apologize. I'm sorry that I acted that way. Isn't that what we want in conflict? Don't we want to like actually solve the problem and get to the issues? We cannot do that as long as we're going tit for tat. We cannot do that as long as we're bringing evil back to evil. We can't. But when we learn to control what we can control, which is us, we can bring peace in the midst of conflict. So when someone is ugly, I don't bring more ugliness. I bring the opposite of what they need. And when I'm ugly, I need other people to bring the opposite of this ugliness. That's how you solve conflicts. Look what Paul says in this section, Romans 12:21. He says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Translation, there's a lot of evil in the world. There's a lot of people who are unhealthy. There's a lot of people who don't know how to handle conflict very well. Don't be overcome by it. Don't let someone else's bad behavior turn you into something that you don't want to be. You work on you. You control what you bring to the table. And watch what it does. When you are healthy, unhealthy people have to choose what they're going to do. And when you are healthy, an unhealthy person is going to choose either to become healthy or they're going to leave. That's it. Now, that's scary for us because we don't want people to leave, but I'm not in control of other people. And I'm not responsible for other people. I'm just responsible for myself. And I'm responsible to be healthy. And when I am healthy emotionally, when I'm healthy physically, when I'm healthy spiritually, when I am healthy, unhealthy people have to respond. And ultimately, what I hope is that they respond to bring health to their relationships. And they say, hey, I try to gossip with Rob, but Rob's just not going to put up with it. So I got to change my behavior. I try to tear other people down, but when I come to Rob, Rob just won't tear people down. I can't break him. I've tried to find people that he'll tear down, but I just can't do it. So I'm going to have to change my behavior. What would happen if every single one of us committed to representing Jesus in our relationships well? We would have healthy relationships. I cannot control other people. I can only work on controlling myself. The goal of conflict should be nothing more than finding the best possible answer. And when you're in conflict, what you're going to be tempted to do is to respond to people the way they've responded to you. They're angry, so I'm going to get angry, or I'm going to shut down. That doesn't solve conflict. What you need to keep your eye on the prize is say, hey, listen, there's a conflict. There's something we disagree about, but we're going to compromise. We're going to figure out how to solve it for the good of our relationship. And in order to do that, I've got to bring my best to this argument. Not my worst, my best. And so I'm going to be committed, if I'm someone who is aggressive and loses my temper, I'm going to be committed to try to bite my tongue and I'm going to separate myself when I start to feel really angry. If I'm someone that is passive, I'm going to commit to sit and have a hard conversation because I know it's my temptation is to shut down, but problems don't get solved when I shut down. I'm going to commit to stay there. If I'm passive aggressive, I'm committed to not use your toothbrush to clean the toilet. That's my commitment. I'm not going to try to get back at you. I'm not going to try to hurt you because ultimately I want what's best for our relationship. Conflicts solve problems when we fight for our families instead of in our families. And you cannot control how other people in your family fight. You can only control the way you respond. So what would happen? What would happen if instead of reacting to every conflict that's brought our way, we intentionally responded in a way that honored Jesus? So here's today's win. The win is what you do with this. When conflict happens, you are either more passive, passive-aggressive, or aggressive. If you don't know what you are, ask your family. Someone will be honest with you. Someone will tell you. And once you know what you are, that you're either passive, you're passive-aggressive, or aggressive, once you know what you are, respond to conflict in a more healthy way. Because this is easy to say, yeah, I'm married to someone that's aggressive, or I'm married to someone who's passive-aggressive, or my kids are aggressive, my kids are passive-aggressive. It's easy to see in other people. But this series is not about correcting your family. It's about working on you. You bring health to your family. So are you passive? Are you passive-aggressive? Or are you aggressive? Take a step towards fixing, towards working on that. Choose to respond to conflict in a healthy way. Will you pray with me? God, we come before you right now. And this stuff's not easy to talk about because we all have conflicts. And people are difficult. God, sometimes we're difficult people. We have emotions, we have stress, we have issues, there's financial burdens, there's all sorts of things that bring conflict, God. And God, it's not easy to work on ourselves. But thank you that you're a God of grace. Thank you that you're a God of love. Thank you that you're a God that loves us and is patient with us, but you inspire us to be better than we could ever be on our own. So we ask, God, today that we would choose to bring health to our relationships. We ask, God, that in the midst of evil, in the midst of conflict, in the midst of unhealth, God, that we would bring health. And we ask, God, that you'd help us to realize what we bring to our families. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.